Welcome to the Unpolished MBA. I'm your host, Monique Mills. Many times entrepreneurs are called unpolished because they are scrappy and do things in unconventional ways. Well, I like the name Unpolished MBA so much that I even trademarked it. So on this podcast, we commend those with practical experience because they've proven time and time again that one can be successful in business even if they don't have a formal MBA degree. So on each episode, we discuss topics related to business and entrepreneurship, and I've been told that my guests and I provide insights and inspiration to aspiring and current entrepreneurs alike. So this is the place where you can come and hear real life stories that can help you navigate both challenges and opportunities in business. Now let's jump into the next episode. Yes, I always appreciate your posts about pricing because you and I are like digitally high-fiving most of the time.
That's right.
So hello, Unpolished MBA audience. I want to introduce to you a special guest that after a three-decade career in investment management, investment banking, and strategic advisory, John Ray formed Ray Business Advisors, a business advisory practice, in 2013. John's services include advising solopreneurs and small professional service firms on their value, their positioning, and business development, and their pricing. Hence brings us to this episode. John is the author of the new book, The Generosity Mindset. Hello, John Ray. Welcome to the podcast.
Monique, I am just honored beyond words to be able to be with you, and thank you for having me on. I'm a big fan of you and your podcast.
Thank you. And likewise, the mutual respect is there. I have so many things I want to go through with you about some of the details in the book. First of all, the title of the book, The Yes. Generosity Mindset. When I first saw that, I'm like, I wouldn't make that connection to that being associated with pricing. Where'd the title come from?
So it's a counterintuitive idea. And the idea is that if you make it about other people, and the it is not just your mindset, but your way of doing business and looking at the world. If you orient yourself toward other people and where they are, what their needs, hopes, wants, desires are, then you will be able to understand better what they value. You will be able to understand better what they need for their lives and what they're willing to pay for. And that's, people are willing to pay for transformation, and you will be able to price your services better than you would be otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I call that a mindset of generosity, not that you're giving anything away at all. In fact, I say in the book, do not discount.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's about having a generous spirit. And thinking of others and their needs first. And if you do that, the irony of all this is that you will be able to run a more profitable business with better pricing, and you'll be happier.
So was that the inspiration behind the book? Like when I first started reading like the intro and you tell the story about your client, was mm-hmm. that the inspiration, or what was the inspiration for this book? All right, let's take a moment to thank the biggest sponsor of the Unpolished MBA. That's TPM Focus. TPM Focus is a strategy consulting firm that helps startups and small business owners generate revenue and find their way to profitability when they're launching a new product or in a new market. So reach out to tpmfocus.com. TPM stands for The Profit Matters, Focus.com.
Well, I think the inspiration for the book itself was really the fact that when I came through and started my business, I found that I had a pricing problem and I didn't have a place to go to easily fix that problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's a fun fact of the day for you. The last time I saw this statistic, there are only 9% of business schools in this country have a course on pricing.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that course. Let me just tell you. They didn't have it. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so even if you went and got your MBA, right? Even if you did that, you didn't really learn about pricing. And if you did, a lot of what you learned is wrong. We could talk about that for a long time.
Yeah.
but because a lot of it is focused on market penetration and analyzing the market, and that's really market share, and that really doesn't apply to a entrepreneur, solopreneur, small firm services company. So that was the inspiration. Is I need to put down what I've learned over time, because I became passionate about this and the fact that there just wasn't a lot of opportunity for entrepreneurs to learn in a concise way how to better position themselves and price their services.
Yeah, and you're pretty active on you're very active on LinkedIn, and so I've seen some of your insights over the years, and it's nice to see it all come together in a book with additional context and real stories with your clients included. So I know when you mentioned, the MBA, most MBA programs are geared toward corporate stuff. Mm-hmm. So the small business owner or the solopreneur, or even we have fractional folks these days, all kind of things. There is not really much material for those types of professionals out there. And who do you predominantly serve? Like, who are your typical clients that you help with this?
Great question. So the book is really aimed at, and the folks that I really serve are the solo and small firm professional services provider whose factory floor is essentially between their ears. So it's the consultant, the coach, the CPA, although CPAs think they know more about pricing than they really do, but that's a whole nother subject. attorneys, those professionals that are highly, highly skilled from a technical point of view, and that all pours out of their head. I mean, they're selling their experience and their knowledge. And the question is, that gets very personal, Monique. I mean, because you're really at the end of the day selling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
you are the product, as you say in your book there.
You are the product, and that can be disconcerting, particularly for those that have not been in business that long, or maybe they've had the kind of background that has not led to a lot of confidence in themselves, even though they're very highly technically skilled. And by all rights and measures, you would think that they would not feel that way about themselves. But it's amazing that there are people that do. And it's understandable when you're pricing yourself and a no feels like a personal rejection.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that pricing is directly related to one's confidence in these fields and these types of entrepreneurs?
That's the connection I make in the book. And there are some people that might not believe that. But what I do in the book is I point to the mindsets that hold us back. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm trying to do is just invite people into looking at those mindsets and saying, which of these am I guilty of? And what I suggest is that a mindset of generosity, or what I call the generosity mindset, is the place to lean into to overcome those mindsets that hold us back in our business.
Mm-hmm. So when in the book, you talk a bit about how to price your work. So just to let the audience know, there is, I would say, not just context, but really tactical information too. Like, you give great examples of how this is done. So you talk about pricing whatever your products or services relative to the value the clients receive. So I got two things, which you do go into detail in the book. How do you define value? We hear that word so much. And how do you know what someone else values?
Yeah, so this seems like a really, thank you for asking that question, because it seems really obvious, but it's not. Particularly for those of us that are really highly skilled in what we do, because we think it's all about the thing, either the consulting project, the advisory work, the tax return we prepare, or what have you. It's not just that. It's about the value is both tangible. It's about the thing, and that's the tangible thing that people hire us to do, but it's also intangible. It's what is the client able to do because of a successful outcome in that engagement. So, you know, how has their life changed in both professionally in the business and personally because of that successful outcome? So if I've done consulting work for a company and the owner of that company has a much bigger business, is able to expand, there are a lot of benefits that come to them that are intangible that I don't necessarily see when on the front end, but it's value that gets created throughout the engagement and when that engagement is successful. Mm-hmm. And we often do not price that value. We don't price to, even though that value is received by the client, we often don't price to receive some piece of that value. And that's really what I'm trying to get folks to open their eyes to, is that there's the thing and what that's worth, the tangible thing that we get hired for, but there's also the intangibles that come out of outcomes. And because clients see these intangibles, they always see more value in us than we see in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And this is a really key point when it comes to pricing our services.
Is it important for the entrepreneur, whoever is presenting the proposal to the client, is it important for them to verbalize or identify and discuss some of those intangibles, or is that something that is just understood?
Well, it's never understood because we don't fully know what's going on in the head, the heart, and the stomach of that client across the desk, right? So, I mean, one example, I talk about this in the book. I mean, I had a situation where I was called into, referred into a client, and was talking to the business owner, and he and his wife owned the business, and it was just me and him, and he was going on and on about all these great things they had done. And I was really getting to the point of thinking, well, I'm not even sure why I'm here, because like, it sounds like everything's great to me. Mm-hmm. And then his wife walked in the room and he introduced me to her, and she immediately says, "Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're here." She says, and she launched into all the problems that they had. And basically one of the problems big problems was we don't know what this business is worth. We have no idea. We don't have no idea whether we've built value in the business or not. And our whole retirement is sunk into this business. Well, suddenly truth walked into the room.
Yeah.
So if she hadn't walked into the room, I would have priced my services based on these things that he said he needed done, as opposed to looking at what the bigger picture is and the outcomes that his wife was looking for. And he was too. He just didn't want to admit it. Right. Mm-hmm. And that had the emotional cost of wondering whether your retirement is going north or south is tremendous. Mm-hmm. So if what I learned from that is you have got to have conversations with your potential clients about what their needs, hopes, wants, and desires are, some of which have nothing to do ostensibly with the services that you provide. And if you do that, you'll have a much better understanding of how to define value as they define it, looking at it from their perspective.
Mm-hmm. How much time should be invested in understanding? Because, and I'm asking that because with, especially in these small businesses where, I mean, with solopreneurs, freelancers, fractional folks, if there isn't a fee to keep calling them and kind of just, I got a quick question, without them actually committing to hiring the service, gaining understanding of their intangibles and all of that can really turn into multiple meetings, requests for your time, and semi-consulting upfront, really free of charge, in a way, because you're not going to like not answer their question, especially if you're trying to get the business. So then back to my original question to you, how much should you invest in getting to that understanding?
Yeah. So this is a great question because a lot of professionals rush this, and they rush it because they're interested in getting to the engagement stage. And what my contention is that the quality of your engagement options that you present, and your ability to price is really based on the quality of a value conversation. And that quality does not really necessarily have to be measured by time. It's more, I think, measured more by depth.
Okay.
So again, back to that example I mentioned earlier, I was having a very surface level conversation with this entrepreneur until his wife walked in the door and again, dropped truth on the table. And so then suddenly we went deep, and we went deep in a way that helped me better understand what the real true value that they were looking to get out of a relationship with a service provider, what that value was. So really, I think that's what it gets to is not, let's say if you're an accountant, it's not, how do you want the financials to look, and spending, surface time on that rather small detail in the grand scheme of things. It's what are you going to do with these numbers once we get them? And what's the goal for the business? And what's the goal for you? And we as services providers are often so anxious to make the sale, we don't get into that depth. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm advocating.
Are you an advocate of productize services or I don't want to box you into one or the other, individually priced services, meaning that each person that you may be quoting may get a different quote depending on the needs and what they, you know, what their value would be from the situation?
I think that depends on your business. I mean, if you're a consultant, if, let's say you're a solopreneur consultant and you're basically, let's say you've got a handful engagements every year and that really makes your year, then yeah, I mean, I think every set of engagement options you present to a client should be individualized. But if you've got a SaaS based company, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. So the question in that case is, how do you create avatars of your clients, of your best fit clients, in which you can understand where they see both that tangible and intangible value? And part of that, and you've written about this too, is part of that is getting out of the conference room with the whiteboard and actually talking to clients and potential clients. Mm-hmm. And better understanding not just how they react to your product, but what their needs are that go beyond what your product delivers. And that, I think, is the way to better understand where the typical client, the typical best fit client that you have, where they see value and how you can price to that value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of customer discovery and user research. Mm-hmm. It should inform your decisions and ensure that you're providing what they need, not what you want them to have, which is a big problem.
Yes.
So you mentioned in the book about how it's important to price your work relative to the value clients receive. Does it depend on what you're selling and what type of business? And what I mean by that is this mostly B2B, B2C? Because it made me also think of in consumer products, where it's kind of rule of thumb to price it where clients perceive value is higher than the price. Because folks like to feel like they're getting a deal. Mm-hmm. Is that the same mindset that you're finding with the consultants, the lawyers, the people that you work with, their clients see them? Do they want to see them as getting a deal or no?
Well, yeah, I mean, so there's maybe the way to come at this is to think about what the continuum of buyers looks like. So based on the research that I see, for any product or service, there's probably about 25% to a third of the potential buyers out there that are basically they're price first buyers. All mm-hmm. they care about is the price. Mm-hmm. And you can talk till you're blue in the face with them about what additional value, try to have a value conversation with them. But they're really all they're interested in is the lowest price. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's true for really all of this. So the question then is, okay, for that other is trying to identify who those folks are and make sure that you identify them early before you have a before you get into a deep conversation mm-hmm. with them. And a lot of times they'll telegraph themselves and you'll understand that very quickly. I mean, anytime someone calls me up and the second question is, so what are your rates? I know exactly where I am with that person. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And then the question then is when it comes to, whether it's B2B or B2C, the further you get down the continuum of B2C, it really gets into more branding and perception and, your quote unquote conversations with clients are really based in the messaging that you're delivering and the messaging that is accepted, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I go to Home Depot and I'm looking for a lock for my self-storage unit, and I see a master lock, that has a different perception of value to me than the generically named lock that Home Depot might sell. I don't know if they do or not, but the point is that Master Lock has developed a brand through years and years of trial and error and messaging and so forth that customers accept, and they know that there's some swath of customers, I'd be one of them, that's willing to pay more for a Master Lock than for that generically priced lock or that generic lock that's priced lower. So that's how it works in a B2C environment. The great thing about us that are B2B smaller firms and solopreneurs is that we have the luxury of being able to have these conversations with our clients because we don't have the same volume that the big services firms do. Some of us are refugees from professional services firms, you know, that require us to price in a certain way and maybe price by the hour, for example. And we're not bound by that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's the great thing about that, having that freedom and flexibility.
You mentioned how if someone asks you about your rates, you kind of already know where we're headed. With folks like that, would you prefer in B2B, would you prefer if people led with their budget? Like, hey, John, I got $1,500. This is where I'm having issues. Is there anything you can work with within my budget? Would you prefer that or for them to share everything and then they'll say you're too expensive, which is my next question after this.
That's a great question. So someone telling you what their budget is should be viewed as a data point and not as a flag that gets planted in your head as that's all that they will spend. I mean, the truth of the...
That's so good, John. I got to stop right there.
Okay.
That is so wise. That is so wise. B2B, B2C, all of that. Oh, thank you for saying that. And I'll tell you about why that really hit home right now for me.
Please,
you're absolutely
please.
Right. Well, yeah. And this is not even relevant to business, but my daughter is going to the prom this year. I'm like, okay, I'm not spending more than a couple $100 on a dress. Well,
guess what?
$700 later. Mm-hmm. She has this, you know, this beautiful gown. And I'm thinking, I'm like, how did we get there? I said to the folks in the dress shop, like, this is the budget and we're only looking at these things. And you're right. I actually had more room. But in my head, all those other things were like, why would we need to spend that much? It should only cost this. And I found that, well, that's not necessarily true, right? It depends on you, on the dress, right, on your preference, all these things. And so with that explanation and showing of other options, which you talk about putting together your options, mm-hmm, with them showing the options, it actually had me increase my budget. And after a while, I'm like, oh, yeah, so what we're looking for is actually not going to fall within this budget. So you make me feel like I'm not as crazy. So I'm not the only one who would do something like that, right?
Yeah, I love that example because that actually illustrates a couple of things. One is that a budget is a guess. And here's the thing. I don't know about you, but I would go into a dress store having no idea what prom dresses cost. I mean, I would have no idea because it's been a while for me.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. So yeah, I would be one of those people that I might have a budget, but the budget would meet what the reality is, and reveal that a budget is just a guess. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. When we have clients that tell us what their budget is, what we forget is that they have no idea what things cost. They have no idea what your services cost. They have, and they're always going to guess low when they guess. So you cannot, it's only a data point. When you hear someone say, well, we've got this budgeted and we've got to make it fit. The other thing to remember about budgets is a budget is a priority. So when somebody tells you they don't have enough money to do whatever it is the conversation is covering, well, how are they paying the light bill? How are they paying their attorneys? How are they paying their accountants? I mean, they've got money. The question is not whether they have money. The question is whether they've got the priority.
Yeah.
And this is where we take answers from the client and we, instead of digging in a little more as to where they see value, and where they see value may lead to a point where you can't do business because there's not a match in terms of what they're willing to pay. Like you pointed out in the dress shop, hey, we can get you a $200 dress, but here's what it looks like.
Yeah. And will your daughter be happy with that? Is that the newest trend? All those intangibles, they know you only got prom once, right? This is the senior year. And
you want
your daughter to be happy. This is the last time you're probably going to see her have this kind of dance. And next time will be when she gets married. And so you got all of these things that are kind of unspoken, but the folks running the place, they understand where we are, you know, as parents.
Yeah, I had a similar thing happen to me when I took my son, when he was a teenager, took him to the orthodontist. And the orthodontist has this wonderful, computerized way of looking at what his smile is going to look like when the treatments are finished. And when I saw the look on my son's face when he saw what he was going to look like, it was like, okay, I'm just pulling out the checkbook, right? Of whatever whatever that cost, I'm willing to pay, because that's it. That's the intangible value, right? You mentioned it with your daughter. Seeing the smile on her face when she looked in the mirror and saw herself in that beautiful $700 dress that you bought for her was a huge intangible value that you didn't put in your budget.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It certainly was not in my budget. I had no idea prom dresses cost as much as some people's wedding dresses. This is nuts. Mm-hmm. So in your book, you talk about creating value-based pricing with options. And so you had good, better, best. And I'm not going to give it all away. Folks really need to get the book. But I want you to elaborate on this right here. It's chapter 8. And that's the chapter that's titled Crafting Engagement Recommendations. So in that chapter, you mention, quote unquote, a small yet vital detail that engagements should include. Please elaborate on what that is.
Ah, well, this is where we get into really sales. And that small little vital detail is an expiration date. All engagement options should have an expiration date. And here's the reason, is because how many times have you, and I've sent these emails that, or I'm just checking in, just wanted to see what your thoughts are on my proposal. And it is the weakest, most insipid little thing that never gets a response, right? It rarely does it get a response. And when it does, it's always something that involves kicking the can down the road on part of the of the prospect, right? You've got to come at it differently than that, because you've got, whether you have just, even if you've just started and have zero clients, you cannot let a prospect tie you up in knots, either emotionally or in terms of how you're running your business. I mean, you've got to say, hey, these options are good until such and such a time. And that time is, I don't think that needs to be a long period of time. Either they really want to engage with you and try to figure out how, the best way to work together, or they don't. And it's just not a priority for them at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get to the expiration date, a couple weeks out, say, hey, haven't heard from you. I'm sorry it didn't work out. You know, this is the day we picked out that our options would expire, because I've got to make plans for my business. You got to make plans for yours. All the best. If I can help you in the future, let me know. The people that are really interested, if you've got the guts enough to send that email, the people that are really interested will respond back immediately and say, whoa, here, I really am interested. It's just, you know, I've had issues with my family. I hadn't been able to get back to you, or whatever the issue is, they will respond to you. The ones that never were really going to do anything with you to begin with, either they'll respond and say thanks, or they won't respond at all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's been my experience as well. So you actually fit the criteria of one of your ideal clients, right? So you fit the mold yourself. So when you charge them, I'm guessing you too follow your pricing strategies. How do they feel about that? Have you experienced someone saying you're too expensive, or having the same kind of feedback that, you know, we too experience in the market?
Well, yeah, I do have people that say to me, well, I guess if I'm talking to you, I'm going to pay more than everybody else, or something like that. I mean, if they know of this work that I do, then they might make some comment about that. And my response is, look, it's not really about the price to begin with. It's about the value. Mm-hmm. So are you going to get more value out of this transaction we're going to do, out of this relationship we're going to have? Are you going to get more value than what you paid? And that's really what it gets down to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I mentioned in the book is, I think it's a feature, if you will, should be a feature of any conversation with a potential client, to say, look, I'm not the cheapest option that you could select mm-hmm. for this service. So, you know, why is it that we're talking with each other? Why did you select me? Because you know I'm not the cheapest.
That's right. Yeah.
And so if you, again, have the guts enough to ask that question, you'll learn a lot from that. And that's where, again, clients see more value in you than you see in yourself. So it's a liberating thing to have develop the courage to be able to ask those kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. For sure. As a consultant, the consulting side of things, from my experience, because you want to help people and folks know you're knowledgeable, some of those conversations on understanding, as I mentioned before, can kind of drag out because they're receiving value just from the conversations, in a way where they're just like, oh, they'll keep asking questions. And so you have to sometimes put boundaries in place where we won't be discussing your specific problem and how to solve it in our discussions. That's for the engagement.
Right.
And so I'm always interested to know how others deal with that, because that, let's hop on a quick call, you got a quick minute, those kind of things are basically unpaid consultations. That's what folks are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's the case, how do you suggest folks handle that?
Well, it's a judgment call. And I think what you have to do is you have to understand what are your current clients paying you for? Mm-hmm. And if you start veering into a conversation, veering into territory that your clients are paying their hard-earned money for, and you're answering those questions for free mm-hmm. with someone else, then that's a problem.
Yep.
And I get upfront with people about that and say, look, I've got clients that pay for this, for these answers. If you want to talk about how we can engage with each other and I can help you, I can craft some options that you can pick from on how we can work together and solve some of these questions and give you some answers, I'm happy to do that. Yeah. But if you're not willing to do that at this point, then I might have to wish you luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I gathered from your book that discounts equal desperation. Is that an accurate conclusion? Elaborate a little bit on your philosophy around the statement that you should never discount your services.
Well, so what you have to understand about a price is that price is a marketing signal. It is a signal of quality. It's a signal of inferiority, poor quality, and sometimes desperation. So if you are constantly discounting, then nobody's going to believe the quote unquote stated price. Nobody will believe that. The biggest problem I think services providers have generally when they start going down this road is they don't have good, better, and best options to be able to point price-sensitive buyers to. Hmm. So, you know, they don't have a very basic offering that their, let's call them their economy car buyers would be interested in. Now those that are and consequently they don't have on the other hand I should say they don't have a Lexus or a Tesla type of offering mm-hmm. for those clients that are willing to pay almost any price in order to engage with Monique Mills or John Ray, right? So
yeah.
If you have options, it helps clarify where people are in their and where they see value.
Mm-hmm. John, you're right on point. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I was just going to say I needed to tie that back to discounting. So mm-hmm. if you just provide options, that really helps alleviate that itch that you may have for mm-hmm. discounting, because most buyers want to be in the middle. I mean, that's really where most of your buyers should end up mm-hmm. is in the middle. So, and then when that, economy car buyer comes along, you can point them toward your basic offering.
There is a whole chapter, listeners, there's a whole chapter 8 on this concept of good, better, best options. I advise you to dig in. You just mentioned how most people want to be in the middle, and so that would be the better, not the good. The good would be the lower end. Better is the middle, and the best is the top one. So if right. it takes me back to thinking about, like, at a movie theater, I'm just going to tell you, the popcorn there is like a 50 cents difference between the better and the best. It may even be maybe a dollar less than. So you end up buying the bigger one because it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. And they get that extra dollar.
The thing is, at the movie theater, there's so many other factors at play, right? The experience, you want to have the popcorn, it smells so good, all of those things that are kind of factors. But in the business world, how do you perceive that? Is that considered a little sneaky, or should it just be very, very clearly defined that this is the better option, but it's not $10 cheaper than the best? Like, what approach do you think is most appropriate?
Well, for B2B services, the biggest mistake that I see when it comes to developing options is that third option is not priced high enough.
Okay.
And so the third option should be only about a distinct minority of your clients, okay? Only about, let's say, 10-15% of your clients should be at your best level of service. You're what I call the velvet rope, right? They're willing to pay behind to get behind your velvet rope.
Yeah.
And here's the problem, the practical problem if you're a services provider. If you have that velvet rope option too low and you've got too many clients in there, then you're working too hard for too little money, which is one of my red flags of inadequate pricing, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're giving way too much value for the price you're getting, receiving from those clients. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
It does. I mean,
yeah, but mm-hmm. but that's the way I think about it when it comes to B2B services.
It definitely does. And in the book, you go through all the list of red flags, how you can tell that someone is having pricing challenges. Even when they don't recognize it, you can tell just from the conversation. So mm-hmm. yeah, you're really good at this, John. I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom and expertise on the podcast today. What is the best way for audience members to find you, reach out to you, and work with you?
Yeah, well, again, thank you so much, Monique, for having me on. I'm really grateful. And again, it's an honor to be on with you just because you just do such great work and you ask great questions, and I appreciate you. To reach me, there's a couple of different ways. My website is John Ray, JohnRay.co. JohnRay.co is my website. You can find out more about the book. The book's available at all your major book retailers, as the old saying goes. So whether it's Amazon, Barnes and Noble, bookshop.org, it's available at all these different places. And as you mentioned, I'm on LinkedIn. And if you want to sample the book, I've regularly kind of created some excerpts in my LinkedIn newsletter. And that's a great way to kind of sample some of what I've had to say in the book. But I'm John Ray, JohnRay1 on LinkedIn. So you can find me and subscribe to my newsletter there, my LinkedIn newsletter, and get a lot of information there.
Incredible. I will put the links to all of those different sources into the show notes. And John, I want to thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Monique.
Thank you for listening to the Unpolished MBA podcast. To hear more episodes or to request to become a guest, please visit unpolishedmba.com.